Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're trying to do a little bit of a primer on French wine without turning it into, and my apologies to all the CPAs out there, but without turning it into the tax code or into something scary.
Giving it a little bit of laughter and sexiness. Is that what you're saying, Tony?
No, that is exactly what you're saying.
All right, so what are the famous and less famous regions?
I would do a ridiculous French accent if I was going to add in laughter and sexiness.
Could you do the rest of the show?
My favorite wine in pantaloons.
Oh, boy.
There we go. See?
All right.
There you go. Just for you.
Thank you, Tony.
Okay.
So what are the famous regions and maybe some of the not so famous regions in France?
Well, you can name a lot of them. I mean, that's the ones that you know, maybe ones that just other consumers know or know of. So if you want, you can just kind of pick a region and quiz me on what are some of the basics of the region.
Ooh, let's start with one that they know less, Loire Valley.
Okay. Loire Valley is big and long, and I mean, Loire River is 600 miles across France. Mm-hmm. It kind of cuts it in half. It's not that far south of Paris when you get to that center of France.
And it's a beautiful region with a lot of beautiful chateaus. It's a great place to visit.
It is a great, like, you know.
Oh, my gosh. Chenonceau is there.
May, June visit.
Yes. Chambord. Just so many. Oh, it's a gorgeous. Yeah, exactly. Springtime.
It's
summertime.
It's definitely summer picnic country.
And lots of animals. I mean, there's a lot of farmland there. So whether it's, you know, produce or farm life.
It's been well protected because it's right in the center of France. And you can spend quality time with farm animals as well as enjoy the wine of the region.
Means the food is good.
They're really kind of, and there's wine grown all along that river valley. Mm. All the way in the west on the Atlantic, you see, one of the wines is something of a, and there are a lot of French wine names that are almost cliche because they were the thing for a while. Mm-hmm. To eat with raw oysters is Muscadet. Mm-hmm. Muscadet is from the Melon grape, and that's from the very far west, right at the mouth of the river into the Atlantic. It's a cool region. It's a white wine that's very light, very clean, lower alcohol, and does beautifully with it shows its fruit well with the saltiness of the oysters. And that's that is one of the great old examples of what grows together goes together.
Right.
Like, exactly. They harvest the oysters, and this is the wine from the vineyards that are close by. And you know what?
They're perfect.
They're fantastic together.
Right. So what's the soil like in that area, especially with a river going through it? And coastal?
It's gravelly sand for the most part.
Okay.
I mean, that's.
And is it a sunny place? But it's too far north.
It's more varied than you think it would be.
Okay.
It is not that sunny. I mean, that's one of the reasons one of the reasons the alcohol does not get that high. You're looking usually at 11, 11.5%. Mm-hmm. Even in a big warm year, maybe 12%.
I think that's interesting to understand about a region is, you know, hey, it's a cold region. It's not going to have as high of an alcohol content.
Well, France is, you have the influence of the ocean in the west. You have mountain ranges that protect certain regions. So learning the map really can tell you a lot about what's going to be possible to happen wine-wise in different areas. Mm-hmm. You all the way from there down to the Côte de Roussillon, right on the Spanish border, and it kind of looks like a desert. It's super crazy dry.
Yeah.
It's right by the
Big
Mediterranean.
Change. Yes.
And you get wines that are 15.5% alcohol, even naturally sweet wines that have alcohol levels that would be 16.5, 17, like Banyuls. And this is all within a country that's, you know, that's maybe, I don't know how long the drive is, but you're talking about something that's 80% the size of Texas. Is not a giant place.
Right.
And that's not the longest distance between, but the weather patterns are so different.
And what's the grape varietal there in the Roussillon?
In the Côte de Roussillon, it's Grenache and Carignan. Mm-hmm. Carignan is Carignan, and Grenache is like your mom's box Grenache Rosé from the fridge, Grenache. Those are the two grapes that, it's going to sound a little ridiculous, but it's true, that translate that soil the best. They're adapted well to that climate. They're old Mediterranean grapes, and they translate the soil there as far as getting mineral flavors across. One of the things about growing grapes in any place, whether it's that Melon grape that does well all the way in that cool site in Muscadet, or Grenache and Carignan that do well down in the Côte de Roussillon, is they're grapes adapted to the weather, but they're also, they're able to be focused and literally get across the mineral flavor of the place. And in the end, you become a little bit tired of just the fruit juice.
Okay.
Or fruit juice that gets translated into alcohol. It becomes a little more interesting when there's a little extra personality or spirit that's there. And when you can notice that the earth is speaking a bit through, you know, from that site. That's that idea of terroir.
I was going to say, now you're describing exactly what terroir means.
It's,
and a lot of
that,
people
that
might
combination
not
of
understand it.
The weather, the soil, that particular growing season. There's a story to tell for that vine of what its life was like.
Yeah.
It's like, I've been here for 8 generations. You know, that's...
I've dug my roots down many feet.
The spring was like this. Mm-hmm. The summer was like this.
Mm-hmm.
Harvest decisions were made like this.
It hailed one day and I had all my leaves.
My winemaking was done
in
a clean way.
Right.
So I can live a long time and tell the story of what has happened.
I love that. That's what's so cool
about wine. Of my life as a vine and my ancestors.
It does reflect.
If you history. Slow down yourself enough to take it all in, sensually, you can also absorb it intellectually, and
that's really fascinating.
A weird little, this is not purely my alcoholism speaking, but this is is a funny little tuning into the earth and its cycles that can go on. That's contemplative. That's very interesting about wine from places, and that's literally what the excitement about French wine is from. Not just that wine may go with the dish. Or this may be really tasty in that sort of fruit juice and alcohol way, but that it's going to have more to say than just those things.
Mm-hmm. What producers from the Loire and the Roussillon do you like, or would you point out?
Well, let's stick to Loire for a minute, because I was just using them as disparate examples of weather patterns.
Okay.
In Loire, you have sort of three big areas. In this, we talked with Muscadet coming from the west, all the way at the ocean. There's a big, broad center. There's a red wine that is made largely from Cabernet Franc there. The most famous place for that is Chinon, C-H-I-N-O-N. And these are light to medium-bodied red wines that are more sort of blue fruit and can be kind of vegetal depending upon the year. And the warmest years are the wines that are usually the most attractive and the least vegetal, but they're always going to have some of that vegetal flavor. And they do well with particular dishes, the game that the Loire is famous for, they do very well with. There's not a lot of tannin, but if you're hunting venison or hunting quail or something that's in the wild,
there's no fat.
There's intense flavor, like Chinon has, but there's not that much fat. It's nice to have the acidity. It's nice to have the intensity, but you don't need the tannin, that sort of chalky material that's there in bigger red wines that kind of bites into like the big fat in a steak or something
tannin.
Like that.
Got it.
That's the most famous red that comes from the center. The whites that come from the center, the most probably important and ubiquitous and popular for a long time has been Vouvray. And Vouvray is made from Chenin Blanc as a grape. And there are many wines, dry and sweet, made from Chenin Blanc. Chenin Blanc has a pretty high acidity naturally and a kind of in a citrusy way, almost like tangerines or grapefruits or pomelos or something. And they have a very crystalline kind of intense fruit. And they can often be a little more attractive if they're left a little bit sweet because that acidity is so high. They seem out of balance if they're perfectly bone dry sometimes. And Vouvray is made in dry, medium sweet, and sweet styles, and also in sparkling, which can be really fun and not crazy expensive.
Okay. And this, with the Saint-Marc cheese, which is famous in that region, what do you like to drink with that?
Well, Saint-Marc comes from a little bit further east from the Touraine. It's Saint-Marc de Touraine. And the wine from Touraine is all Sauvignon Blanc. There's kind of a divide in the center of the Loire Valley between Chenin Blanc growing regions and Sauvignon Blanc growing regions. And the Sauvignons in the Loire are the really crispy, flinty, bright, a little bit lower alcohol, less fruity versions. And Touraine is one of the less famous ones, but is delicious and a good value. And that can be terrific with Saint-Marc du Touraine, the goat cheese from there. Further east, the most famous Sauvignons in the Loire, Sancerre, which is pretty darn well known and is almost one of those cliche names.
Okay.
And that's a very crispy, seems fruity, but there's no sugar there. And Sancerre is from far in the east, almost towards Burgundy, and from, this is going to sound ridiculous, Camarigian soils, which are the same chalky soils you see in Champagne or you see in Chablis. And it has that bright, flinty earth that you see in Champagne or in Chablis as well. Mm-hmm. But it's Sauvignon Blanc that's grown there. And Puy Fumé, which is right across the river. And literally, Puy Fumé is the town of Puy on the Loire. And it has a hillside that tends to be cloudy in the morning, hence Fumé, smoky.
Oh, that's cool.
So good. It's right behind the town. Hmm. The vineyards on the hill are the smoky vineyards of Puy Fumé.
That's cool to hear.
From there. Mm-hmm. And those clouds always make it a little less ripe and a little less like crispy fruity than Sancerre. And it's also usually maybe a better purchase than Sancerre because it's not as well known.
Okay.
And so, but they're your sort of Loire basics.
Okay.
So pick another region.
How about Alsace, which is so different, it feels like.
Alsace is so different. And Alsace is in the far northeast of the country. And when you look at a map of France, immediately there's kind of, the map of France almost looks like your hand splayed out. And if there was if your hand was palm down, that pinky that shot off to the mm-hmm. to the northeast is Alsace. Okay. And on the way to that pinky, there is a mountain range called the Vosges. And that mountain range stops weather from coming across France. And Alsace is the second sunniest region. Here's what you don't like. It's cool because it's northeast.
Sure.
And it's continental, and it was part of Germany for a long time. But it's cool but sunny. You get very good ripeness of a lot of grape varietals there. And the other thing that's interesting in Alsace is and these are the long, tall German-looking bottles that scare us because we think there's going to be residual sugar there. Those wines are often varietally labeled. That has been the tradition for the last 150 years or so. Prior to that, they're always field blends. People grew what did well in certain sites, and they would name it for the site.
Okay.
But sort of, I think because of the border flipping back and forth to remain commercially viable and to be a little more predictable as far as the sweetness level of the wines, they started varietally labeling the wines about 150 years ago, before the Franco-Prussian War, actually.
And what are those varietals?
The dry ones, typically Pinot Blanc or Pinot Auxerrois, Sylvaner, not so well known, but a little bit lower in alcohol, and can be clean. Muscat is usually dry, but smells like it's going to be really exotic. Mm-hmm. Muscat, right? Mm-hmm. Riesling usually is pretty darn dry in Alsace. A little bit of residual sugar, but the acidity is pretty intense. And Riesling is the pride of and the ones that age the longest in Alsace. And that's something that half of the discussion in Alsace, the winemakers, is about Riesling, and the other half is about all the other varietals.
Wow. So they must pick earlier than everyone else because it's so warm there.
No,
or that there's more sun.
It's sunny,
there.
But it's not
it's
warmer.
It's not warmer. Okay.
So right. They tend to have nice ripening, but slow ripening and good acidity because of the cooler nights because of the weather pattern. So if you want very fresh wines with good intensity, and these are almost all white wines, the only red you see grown there is Pinot Noir, and it is not often attractive. It's hard to ripen red wine that far north and get the skins ripe, which gives you ripe tannins. Otherwise, you get green tannins. Tannins are almost like tea, like iced tea that's been oversteeped, and that's kind of tough. But the other varietals to know for sure are Gewürztraminer, which tends to be the sweetest of them. And they'll harvest that where they're 25 to 30 or 35, 40 grams of residual sugar, which comes off as pretty sweet. But the wines are intense and really is a bit of a treat. And Pinot Gris, which is the same grape as Pinot Grigio in Italy. But it's kind of an interesting it's an interesting phenomenon to see it in a richer, it's almost like a smoky apple pie, but dry, like the size of California Chardonnay kind of wine without the oak. Most of the tradition in Alsace is to do wines without oak.
Okay. Should we move to Bordeaux?
We can move to Bordeaux. We did a little bit of a start, and Bordeaux is sort of a giant thing to know. Bordeaux is the most productive region in France as far as how much wine is actually grown. Those five grapes, the reds, I sort of mentioned two, Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon. Cabernet Franc, but a different version of it than you see in Loire, is grown there. Malbec, a very small quantity of it, and not like the Argentinian Malbec, which is really raised in a high desert. This is just this is in the river plateau. And very mild, consistent weather river plateau in Bordeaux, because they're coming off the seacoast there. And Petit Verdot, which is a big black inky wine. And these are the wines that with the legendary aging, that's the you know, if when you're turning 50, you know, go and find the best wine of your vintage. And if it's well kept, you're going to be able to drink it, enjoy it. It's going to be very interesting. Mm-hmm. You may pay dearly for it because the entire world has been chasing Bordeaux for a long time.
Right.
And these are relatively big, rich, firm red wines that have tannin, that have acidity, that age a long time, that have good levels of complexity. White wines in Bordeaux, those Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon is the other important grape. Those whites, some from a few places, age very well, but not from very many. There's a large quantity of Bordeaux whites that is dry, fruity Sauvignon meant for early consumption. That's great summer wine. There is some that's meant for aging a long time from the most famous couple of sites, and they're crazy expensive. Maybe the world's most famous sweet wine is also from Bordeaux, and that's Sauterne. And these are white wines made from Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc, those two same grapes, but that get a noble rot, or a sort of almost like a mold that takes all the water out of the grapes, intensifies them. They let them become oversweet on the vine. They remove those skins, and that very intense juice they make into very sweet, almost nectar, mm-hmm. that is aged in oak barrels.
So beautiful. It can be so pretty.
And that can live a very, very long time. I've had some Sauternes, you know, well over 100 years old. And I know we had a bottle from the 20s.
Mm-hmm. That was really special to taste.
That was amazing to taste.
And the color, everything about it. That was such an opportunity to get to taste something that was that old.
It was great. When we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, we're going to run through a few more regions in France.